as you're describing.
Oh, geez, how long do we have?
This is the start of our series of one of ten.
One of ten, no.
Hello and welcome to episode 213, the Rockstar CMO Effing Marketing Podcast. It's Saturday the 13th of April. I hope you've had a good week and you're staying as sane as you feel you need to be. I'm your host, Ian Truscott. I'm not a rock star, but I am a CMO and trusted marketing advisor. And on this podcast, with the help of my chums, we share marketing street knowledge to inspire your inner rock star. Come say hello. You can find links to me and my guests in the show notes at rockstarcmo.com or on LinkedIn at rockstarcmo. And we are proud members of the Marketing Podcast Network. My normal sidekick, Jeff, is away for a few weeks. So this week, I caught up with my chum and regular guest, Kathy McKnight, Chief Problem Solver at the Content Advisory, and in the Rockstar CMO Virtual Bar, Robert Rose returns to the topic of AI with a cocktail for breakfast. But first, we need to pay the bar tab. I'll be back in a moment.
We'll be right back.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Heiler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Right, let's start the show with someone regular listeners will be very familiar with. My chum, Kathy McKnight, Chief Problem Solver at the Content Advisory. Welcome back, Kathy, to Rockstar CMO FM. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. It's great to have you back on the show. So, how am I going to start this up? So, I believe this is your 10th time on the show, and the last time you were on the show was episode 193. So, for folks who are not regular listeners, can you remind us of who you are?
Sure. And thank you for having me back. And 10 episodes. So, do I get like a CMO Rockstar hoodie or something to commemorate the occasion? Yeah. Excellent.
Absolutely.
Look forward to it.
All the merch.
All the merch.
But how about a beer mat? I've got a beer mat, and I know we don't record video, but I can show you that we have. So I'll send you a beer mat.
Yeah, I'm holding out for the hoodie. Your logo would make an awesome hoodie.
I have got a Rockstar CMO hoodie, actually. And the thing with the logo is whenever I go on Vistaprint, they suck me right in, and I'll get it printed on everything. I've got mugs, hoodies, everything.
Love it. All right. I look forward to my package.
I'll send you my address
before, at the end of this.
Yeah. Actually, in all seriousness, Kathy, do that, and I'll send you some merch for sure. I've got laptop stickers. I've got the lot.
I'll wear it on my podcast.
I love it. Okay. Which is also not on video.
I will. When I wear the Rockstar CMO gear, I will go. Yeah. We'll do a special edition, and I will go on video.
look what just happened, listeners.
All right, that's promotion at its best. Okay, so I am the Chief Problem Solver and Lead Analyst with the Content Advisory. Your audience hears the dulcet tones of my business partner in crime, Robert Rose, every week with you. We work with organizations and brands, guiding them, teaching them on how to get the most out of their content efforts. So it could be helping them with content marketing strategies, execution roadmaps, working with them to optimize their content team and structure and governance, which is where I love to lean in. I'm a total geek in that space. And lately, actually, we've been doing a lot of work with teams on their approach to Gen AI and how to get them from a content ops to orchestration frame of mind.
Yeah, and I'm going to talk about your webinar series that you've got going at the moment, and I'm going to mention one specific one on this topic of content operations. But you did do an episode, didn't you, at one of your content advisory webinars about Gen AI, and everybody's talking about AI. But what I loved about your take was it's business as usual. There's a structure. You need a strategy. Here's how you put your strategy together. So I'll include a link to that actually in the show notes. So I think that was a great way of looking at this stuff and going, look, behind all this fluff and bollocks, it's actually just another tool. It's just, so that was fantastic.
Yeah, we always endeavor to give practical, actionable advice when we work with clients. We don't want them to leave them with this beautiful deck, which they then look at and go, okay, now what? So it's very instructional. There's the steps to take. There's the things to think about. So, you know, we try and make sure that our monthly webinar is the same.
Yeah, no, it's great. And the other thing is, and I was going to mention this later too, is they're ungated. So if you pop yourself along to the contentadvisory.net, you'll see all of them under resources, right? You'll see those last two webinars. Yeah. Anyway, so last week we had Robert talking about content operations, and I wanted to dig into it a little bit more with the chief problem solver, is what you described yourself as at the content advisory, the one who clearly does the hard work. Indeed. So why don't we start off with, let's be honest, Kathy, content operations is not sexy, and we're in an age of quick fixes, hacks, and all of that shit. Why should marketers be taking action on this? And why now? Should we start there?
Absolutely. So, I mean, anybody who has met me in context of the work that we do knows I'm a huge advocate and proponent that the baseline of success is how a team operates. So if it doesn't have defined roles, responsibilities, processes, documentation, training, hashtag all the things, and a shared and known vision, I think that's one of the things too is, you know, everybody has a strategy and it's that big document everybody stresses about and it gets done and it's approved and yes, and then nobody ever looks at it again. Nobody below senior management ever looks at it again, right? And that should be the driver of what is being done. So, you know, people need to understand and buy into that shared vision of what success looks like and how they contribute to those goals. Right? Clarity and understanding where they fit in. And if they don't have that, then they're never going to succeed to the degree that they could if they had all of those things.
Right. So are you saying that content operations is kind of foundational and that if you want to do all the quick fixes, hacks and all that shit, that you actually can do that better if you have that foundation in place? I think you've been on the show before and talked about foundations of a house. It's a bit like that.
Indeed. Yeah, absolutely. And I think there are going to be times where you have to do the hacks and the quick fixes because things drop on our laps all the time that we didn't see coming. And, you know, we could have a whole other conversation about how this creates the balance between that known and unknown work, right? And how you're able to create a better balance, better execution. We can talk about that some other time. But yes, I think foundationally, you have to have those core elements so that you're able to pivot and react and be more agile.
Nice. And talking about foundations and building a house, you're often doing that, aren't you, at your house? Are you doing in the middle of a building project at the moment?
I'm actually not. We have nothing. We have absolutely nothing going on right now, which is, for me is a bit of a change. Although the weather is starting to turn here. I'm based out of Toronto. So although today is absolutely dreary and dismal and horrible, I have a whole project plan that will take me most of the summer about our gardens. So stay tuned on that one.
But nice. I know you too well. I don't want to mention how long we've known each other for, but I know you too well. And I also love the fact you dropped the weather in there because I forgot to ask you because it's obviously on the agenda for whenever we chat on Rockstar. So let me get back on track. So this is a marketing show. Is this a problem just for the CMO or is this a bigger challenge for the organization?
Oh, this goes way beyond the CMO. That isn't to say the CMO isn't a critical component about this, but because content impacts the entire organization, it needs to be enabled and supported for the entire organization. And for that to do that, all senior leadership should care and be advocates and enablers of the content of the company's content operations and its continuous improvement. You know, it's how organizations look at content. As if they can make the pivot and start looking at it as a strategic function of the business, not just something marketing does, that way they're going to be able to get the full potential out of its impact. And it's not just customer experiences and conversions, but internally as well. It really needs to be looked at as, like I said, a strategic function of the business.
Right. And maybe I should have, because you've been on the show a few times and we both know what content operations is, we're talking about the... from ideation to publication, right, of any of the content your organization produces, right, this is what you mean by content operations. The people, the processes, the technology, all of that is in there, right?
Yeah, and it's not just publication. It's all the way through to archive. So, I started talking about ideation to archive, years ago.
I should have paid attention.
I should have written my book back then. That would have been a killer
one. Yeah.
But that's the thing, is you have to think about it from not from the time that the words are written, but from when the idea starts. Because typically we're, in today's operational state, most organizations think asset first. They think, let's create a white paper, let's do a webinar, and where they should be thinking, where they need to be starting from a strategic standpoint is the audience. Okay, who is it that we need to talk to? What is the goal and how are we going to measure success? And only then can you start moving into ideation, which will then get to, okay, what do we need to build? Which will then translate into, okay, what assets are we finally going to get to? Yeah. But most places aren't there yet. And, the shift from operations, which is basically, GSD, getting stuff done. orchestration is the coordination of that. It is taking all of those disparate elements and making them work together.
I was going to get to that because you talked about orchestration in your latest webinar. And I was going to ask you about that as well. But I've certainly been a part of this, and I'm guessing you've witnessed this before, but organizations often make that mistake of creating a content operations team, and I'm doing the little
air quotes.
Air quotes, that's it, because I don't think it is a content operations team when it becomes a factory or a team of short order cooks. And Robert is often referring to this on the show as well, and I've seen it myself. And the content team finds itself producing content on demand. And that's often the way that content is seen. And I like the way you said that some organizations you've worked with are asset focused. Well, sometimes they're also channel focused, right? We need a tick face strategy, or we need to publish this here or whatever. We need and it's not about the content. So how should people that find themselves in that situation where content operations has become a kind of a short order factory on demand thingy and become more strategic as you're describing?
Oh, geez. How long do we have?
This is the start of our series of one of 10.
One of 10. No, seriously. Yeah. Organizations have to stop looking at content as just a function of marketing. That's step number one. Which, some don't even have it elevated to that level. Content is what all companies and brands, regardless of product or service, are training on these days.
Yeah.
So it's the engaging ads and websites, the consistency of experience across all the touch points, all the channels throughout the journeys that really ingratiates audiences to the brand. So in order for that ingratiation, the advocacy to get to, companies need to take their content practices more seriously. Mm-hmm. Look at them more strategically. You wouldn't let a finance team operate without clearly defined processes, governance, authority. Well, companies need to apply that same kind of rigor to content, just as you do with finance and HR. So, start small, maybe a subset of content, like a line of business, a content type, and really understand how that content is being created today, not merely running, but how it's actually working, not how it's supposed to be or how you think it is, but actually working. And then you start building out a process that's more inclusive and measurable. And one, like I mentioned, that starts with audience needs, not like, hey, let's write a white paper because I said I would do four of them this quarter.
I think you read my mind there. Well, we've talked about this so much now, Kathy, because that was exactly what I was going to ask you, is where do you start? So you start with the audience needs. And also what I loved there was, are we doing it because we think we need to do four white papers a month because we've always done it, or because our competitor does it, or whatever? It's got to be about those needs, right?
Absolutely.
So I've alluded a couple of times to the webinar that you did recently, and I just want to make a point that you have an absolutely fabulous catalogue of former clients and probably current clients as well. And one of those people you highlighted on your webinar was Liana Cardenas Cave, right? Have I pronounced it right?
Close enough.
I even rehearsed it before we hit record, and I still haven't got it right. But she's Hilton's senior director of content orchestration, and it's available on your website. It's ungated, so I'd encourage people to check that out. But you touched on this just a moment ago. in that conversation, you were talking about content orchestration. And I don't think we can summarize the whole webinar into this because there's a lot of detail in there. But what's that transition then? So you're shifting now from content operations to content orchestration. What's that?
So again, it's really about taking the ways content is being worked on. So whether it's ideation, whether it's production, whatever the stage is, often those are disparate and siloed and multiple of those across the organization. So those are still operations. Some of them can be very well defined, very efficient, very effective, but in a lot of cases they're not. And for content to truly serve and provide the most value to an organization, it should be coordinated. There should be a centralized access to assets and resources and optimizing what you have for reuse and understanding what's working and what's not. So I've been working with Hilton on and off for 8 years. And every engagement, the work that's been done has been with a vision of making content more impactful and valuable for the organization. They are a strong, recognized worldwide brand that literally is built on experiences, physical experiences, right? So they have definitely switched over to seeing the value and the strategic value that content offers them as a brand, but also from a function within the organization. And it's been a journey, right? They've made the investments needed, technology team, organizational structure, processes. Those are all different projects that I've worked on with them. They've worked on with others as well. And now we're starting to see the impact at a much higher level of the organization because the shift that's happened. They have their SVP of marketing and loyalty, where the bulk of the content related functions sit. He's not only bought into content orchestration, but he's become one of the biggest advocates. And now we're starting to roll it out. And this new way of approaching content, thinking about content, doing content, it's being rolled out to the rest of the organization. So they've really leaned into it, but it's been a journey. It's taken some time.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I didn't realize it was 8 years that you'd been with them. So, but you mentioned there about people, process, and technology. It was a big drive for them for this to get that centralized, because you mentioned having a centralized content orchestration. Is part of that centralizing your content into the systems, and was that important, or was it more important that their processes were figured out, or are they just equal? What would you say?
Eventually, they all have to be aligned. So need to understand what technology you have, what's available from a functionality, what's being used, what's not, where you have overlap, who's using which, because often, you know, you have duplication, especially organizations that have grown through M&A activity, mergers and acquisitions. They can end up with 2, 3, 4 CMSs, right? Content management systems. They can end up, not often, but with a couple of digital asset management systems, different workflow tools, et cetera. So to get people working together to enable that orchestration of effort, you need to align your system. So that absolutely has to be done. Processes have to align. Not everybody is going to do the exact same thing for every type of content, for every business unit. But if you're following the same process, then, or process, depending on where you're from, then people can move in and out of those roles. They understand the downstream and upstream impact of what they do, which again, more ownership, more accountability, and it just enables the entire thing to move faster, more effective, more efficient. And the big difference between operations and orchestration is always evolving. You're moving it forward. You're changing things. It's actually somebody's job to look at how things are being done and consider if there's a better way of doing it and what value that's going to add.
Right. And I presume in that business, because you're talking about multiple geographies, multiple brands, and multiple business units, right? The way, I don't know Hilton that well, but I imagine that I worked with International Hotels Group years ago, and I remember that being a distinct issue with their content. So when you say that they're rolling it out across the business, and the CMO is now leading that. Sorry, head of head of marketing and loyalty. So he's almost got to sell this within those business units, does he? As he goes around.
Yeah, that's actually the next stage that we're moving to is the content, Liana's team, the content orchestration team. We're going to be, we're working currently on the messaging to take it to the stakeholders to say, hey, this is how content is going to work. Yeah. Here's what's in it for you. Here's why it's important. Here's what you need to know. And here's how we're going to do it. And it's a journey. Like, we're not talking, we're going to send this message and then everybody's on it, you know, come June. Yeah, this is going to be a couple of years to get this all really moved out and moving forward, even just the baseline. It takes time. Yeah. But, you know, there's ownership now, there's accountability, and we have a plan.
Yeah, yeah. And adoption is so important, isn't it? And we, we spent, I don't know, I mentioned this, I think, on something I wrote the other day, I can't remember. But adoption is just, it's key to technology adoption is key, but also all of this, and there has to be a enablement and almost an internal selling process, doesn't there, to make this thing work out. And it's often an area I don't think we pay enough attention to, do we, when we're implementing a new program?
No, communications and change management are the two things that fall off the radar really, really quick. Yeah. And any technology, any new technology, any change, any new process, it is all, the success lies at the foot of at the feet of adoption. It could be the best thing ever. And if people don't buy into it, if they don't understand why it's important, what's in it for them, then it's never going to work.
And I don't want to, I don't know who the vendor is over at Hilton and what you guys are using, but does, is the vendor supporting that rollout? Because I would imagine that that's a great opportunity for them to put some skin in the game and actually help invest in that rollout, right? Because I've done that in my past, in when I was in pre-sales and we sold into government, and we set up a little booth in reception to help them learn about the new system we were implementing. And it's kind of cruder version of what you're doing there. But is the vendor part of that? I'm just curious.
There's actually no new technology in this. We have an existing, they have an amazing technology stack. They've made the right investments in power change. They've done some alignment. There will be some optimization happening, but we're not looking currently at adding any new technology. So this is using current, the current stack.
I still think that there's, and maybe I'm going down a little rabbit hole here, but I still think that, there's an interest in the vendor in helping you with something like that because it keeps them sticky in the business and you won't flip out. I don't know. But anyway, maybe I'm just thinking about it because you're more practitioner, I'm more vendor. I just wonder if they could help you with that. So anyway, we were back on the thing of we're shifting from content operations to content orchestration, and it's clear that part of that is process and people, and part of that is the technology. Now, you've been on this journey with them for 8 years. Is there anything that you think, oh, if we'd have known that then, that would have been a quick fix and something that maybe you would have learned a shortcut to now? Is there anything specific that you think this is the tip I would share about what we've gone on with this?
I think one of the most important things is ownership. Is this needs to be somebody's job. They need to have be measured against it as far as, you know, implementation, execution, adoption, evolution. It has absolutely been assigned and is multiple people's on multiple people's responsibilities moving forward at Hilton, and senior leadership buy-in. So really making sure they understand what's in it for them in terms of the business and their goals and how it rolls up to the organization's goals. We often talk about people, process, and technology as a three-pronged approach, right? And it is, but there's the fourth part. If you think about it from a stool, those are the feet. And then the organizational goals and objectives is the seat part, right? And you've got to make sure that whatever you're doing can ladder up to that, whether it's a new system, whether it's a new process, a new approach to content, the content that's being created. If you can't answer why it's important to the company, then you probably haven't thought through it enough. So I think getting that through, having that advocacy at the senior leadership is one of the things that a lot of organizations, you get the lip service for because somebody signed off on the project, but they don't truly understand or make it a part of their day to day.
Yeah. And I wish I'd have asked you that question a bit more pointedly, because absolutely, I agree with you. I think it's like any project you want to get done in a business, let alone whether you want to get it done in marketing, isn't it? Is it has to ladder up to something that somebody gives a shit about at the C-suite, right? So yep. You're not going to say, oh, we're going to go do a content operations project, please sign it off. It's, we are going to do a thing that is going to save money. It's going to get more revenue. It's going to be more efficient. It's going to do something that you really care about, right? Is that what happened there with Hilton as well?
I think that's part of it for sure. And I think the other thing I'd say too is a lot of reasons why things fail within an organization from a change perspective, outside of they haven't done the right change management, communications, et cetera, is they position it as a, oh, we're revamping how we do content, or we're changing it. This is net new. This has to go out as a new way of working, a new approach, a new philosophy, a new strategy, because people fall, oh, well, if it's kind of the same as the old way, if they hated it, they're like, ah, it's not going to be any different. It's not going to work any better. They're not going to pay as much attention to it because it's like, oh, I get it already. Yeah. How different can it be? It really needs to be thought of as new, right? Mm. Content orchestration enables a completely different way of looking and valuing content, and it should be positioned that way.
Yeah, no, I love that. And also what I hope comes through in our conversation, Kathy, and I know you, as I've expressed for many years, I don't think it matters whether we're talking about content operations or content orchestration with you, because you've got such a lot of experience with change management and with that process, that these are just fundamentals of getting shit done in an organization, isn't it? And that's what you seem to bring to every conversation that we have. So that's fantastic. And so that was your previous,
February's, yep.
That was February's webinar. So what's next? What are you going to talk about next?
So April's webinar is on crafting a cutting edge social media approach in 2024. You know, Robert and I really, we batted around quite a few different topics, and we came up with this one because so many people are confused about what to do about social, right? There's no trust on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it. Facebook seems like a void of anybody but our parents. Instagram is all about the influencers. And don't get me wrong, I love the fact that my feed is filled with like Black Labrador videos and, and you know, workout routines and things like that, and good food. But okay, enough already. And LinkedIn, I don't know how you feel about it, but it's really noisy. And it's getting to the point where it's really hard to get value of what you're looking for, right? So, and you know, TikTok's about to be banned.
I think the thing with LinkedIn, it's like being at the station where one of the trains got cancelled and everybody got on your train, because Twitter's gone, you know, to shit, basically.
Nice analogy. I like it.
Yeah, all the regular nice people are now doing their Twitter thing, but they're doing it on LinkedIn, and that's a noisy approach to social media, rather than, I think LinkedIn used to be a bit less noisy.
Yes.
You know,
So we're going to, you know, similar to what I said before about the process, is you need to know what you have now and what you're doing and how you're approaching it, not what you think you're doing or what you should be doing, but what you're actually doing. So we're going to talk about, you know, doing a social media channel audit and then building out a roadmap to make social media work for individual businesses, because it's a little bit different for everybody. And of course, we'll throw in best practices and whatnot and things to think about.
Yeah, I think it's a great topic because like you say, everybody's struggling. I mean, organic social has moved on. You know, that you can't do organic social like you used to be able to.
No.
You now need to switch to paid, and what's the best strategy? And now, if we're now having to put a lot of money and effort into it, you've got to know about it. So is there the registration form on your website now?
If I include
a link to that. Okay, so I'll include a link to that in the show notes. But it's easily found, isn't it? And it's contentadvisory.net, so people can find that pretty cool. You've also, one of the other things that I'm a fan of that I listen to regularly, apart from your webinars and all the Robert E stuff that I do on the show with him, is your Uncharted Journey podcast. Tell us about that. I know we've mentioned it a few times, but we've probably got some new listeners. But, well, hopefully I've got some new listeners. Nothing against the old listeners. Oh, God, I'm in trouble now. But tell us about your podcast, Uncharted Journey.
Yeah, so coming up on 2 years now, and I am so privileged. I speak with someone every week, a woman, about their journey to success, what they've learned along the way, some of the challenges, some of the epiphanies. You know, I've spoken with so many different women of different backgrounds and what they do today and how they got to where they are. And it's just, it's so inspiring. And, you know, I think as we were talking about a little bit earlier, I'm thinking about changing up the conversation a little bit, maybe starting in the fall. So stay tuned for that. But I've just been, it's just such a privilege. And I am so humbled by the generosity of the women that I speak to and just the sheer amazingness of them all. It's every conversation I have, I learn something new, and I'm inspired to do something a little bit better, a little bit different. So it's really been amazing.
Yeah, there's some amazing stories. I know that you focus on women, but there are some amazing stories out there. And I listen to your show as well, and I would recommend it to anybody because some of the stories are so applicable to everybody, I think.
Oh, they are. Yeah, though I speak with women, and one of the reasons why I focus on women is, trying to raise platform for them and whatnot, and give people an opportunity, women an opportunity to tell their stories. Mm. But it really is, my audience is a very mix of a lot of different people from around the world, which is really cool. And everything shared is there. Everybody can take something away positive and learn something.
And as we were saying before I hit record, I really think there's a book in this.
Thank you.
I think if you put those bunch of stories together in a book, I think it would be a fantastic read. But anyway, Kathy, as usual with us, we've gone way past time. It really doesn't matter. But when people spin the dial on the interwebs, where are they going to find you?
I'm on LinkedIn. Content advisory is contentadvisory.net, and my podcast is unchartedjourneys.net.
Splendid. And we now have in this slot now, we choose a tune now. So what tune would you recommend to get your content operations mojo working?
I'm going to go with Don't You Forget About Me, Simple Minds, 1985, because don't forget about the basics. Don't forget about, the things that are working well or the things you take for granted or the things you haven't considered in a while. When you're really looking to take your content practice, operations, orchestration, whatever it is, to the next practice, you've got to look at everything. So, open the doors, pull back the covers, look under the rocks, and don't forget about all the little things as well as all the people involved that make content successful.
I love it. Well, we'll play out with a little bit of that. I'm trying to guess what year that was. It must be
1985.
Got it. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much, Kathy. And I look forward to having you back on the show. I'm sure you will for your 11th time. But for
anytime.
Now, enjoy the rest of your week, and I'll speak to you soon.
Thanks, Ian.
Won't you come see about me? I'll be alone, dancing, you know it, baby. Tell me your troubles and doubts, giving me everything inside and out. And love strange, so real in the dark. Think of the tender things that we were working on. Slow change may pull us apart. When I let get into your heart, baby, don't you forget about me. Don't.
Thank you, Kathy. And that was a little bit of Don't You Forget About Me by Simple Minds, a splendid tune and a splendid chat. Always love catching up with Kathy. And we'll, of course, include all of our links and all those things we discussed in the show notes of rockstarcmo.com. Please check out her work and say hello. Right, it's that time of the week to wind down in the Rockstar CMO virtual bar and join the chief troublemaker of the content advisory, Robert Rose, for a cocktail and a marketing thought. Good evening, Robert. What are you drinking?
Oh, hello, my friend, and welcome to the bar. It's been a busy week. It feels like we're starting to make a turn here so that we're all actually working for a living instead of trying to look for work for a living. So things are good. Good. I actually have something for us this week that's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Because, any time is a good time to start drinking. and so this week, I've got what we call a breakfast martini.
Ooh.
Yes, indeed. And so for those days that you're going to wake up and just start your day with a martini, this is a great way to start your day. And it's a and it's a pretty basic, I mean, as you might expect, it mm-hmm. starts with gin, because there is only one kind of martini, and that's a gin martini.
We both know that.
And so then you have, your regular 1.5 parts of gin, and then you put in a half part of orange liqueur, Cambier, whatever your favorite orange liqueur is. That gets your orange juice in. That's your fruit. then you put in a good amount of lemon juice, actually, freshly squeezed if you can have it. That's always a good way to start your day as well.
Yeah.
And then this is where it gets a little weird. you put in a little bit of orange marmalade. Now, that's something that you can definitely find. Wow. In the UK, and that's it's actually terrific. Harder to find here in the US, especially that which has the proper orange marmalade, which has the little bit of rinds in it and stuff, which is always good. One of my favorite things on toast, orange marmalade on toast is one of my favorites. So you add all that in, the gin, the liqueur, the lemon juice, the marmalade into a shaker, and you got to shake that vigorously because you've got to get that marmalade all dissolved in there. And then you double strain that into basically a chilled glass. You garnish with a lemon wheel if you like that. But it's basically going to come into a sort of a frothy it's your breakfast. It's your breakfast cocktail of choice. And I promise you a couple of these bad boys and you'll go back to bed.
I like that. I can imagine this with a bit of toast on the side.
Oh yes, it's got a little toast, a little egg, a little English breakfast. Yeah, that's some sausages. No beans. That's the only part of the English breakfast that always gets me down. I don't need any beans.
I don't do beans either. I like but I think this will be a nice. It makes a change from a Bloody Mary. It sounds delicious.
Yeah, it is definitely because it's a sweet. I mean, it's very sweet. It's obviously. Very sweet and very orangey. It's a really nice. It's nice on a warm day. It's beginning to get warm here in Los Angeles, so it's great on a warm day.
Nice. So, where would we be sipping breakfast martinis, Robert?
Well, I think we need to be somewhere in a spring-like warm setting.
Yes.
So I'm thinking we're going to be up in the right now here we are in sort of mid-April and so the Rocky Mountains are really just fantastic because we're coming off of snow season and it's warm, so there's still a little bit of snow in the mountains, but all the wildflowers are out and it's warm and it's the sun is warm, and so I figure we'd go up into either Breckenridge or Aspen, one of those places where it's just beginning to get warm. The wildflowers are out, and you can sit outside and beautiful, but there's still snow on top of the mountains and all that stuff. And we'll sit and have these in the altitude, so that it only takes a couple to get us buzzed.
I think I'd only take a couple of these anyway, mate. I love that, and very classy. Sounds very classy. And when conversation turns to marketing, as it always does with us, what are we talking about this week, mate?
Well, shall we talk about AI again? Because
please.
It's only been about 25 seconds since we last talked about AI.
Yes.
I have actually been thinking of a new. We've been working with folks to think about how to get ready for AI because, and I'll put it this way. So, so you're a movie fan.
Yep.
Did you see the new Ghostbusters movie, the Frozen Empire movie?
Oh, no, I haven't. And we were just talking about a movie recommendation.
So just think about the, think about the last movie you saw, right? So for me, it was Roadhouse, the new version of Roadhouse, which was, not
great.
Good? Let's just put it that way. but the reason I mention Ghostbusters is because it scored so poorly among critics, 44% on Rotten Tomatoes, versus the audience who loved it, 84%.
Oh, wow.
And then in addition, Ghostbusters, it's actually done very well at the box office. It's got $45 million in revenue in its first few weeks of release. But so here's the thing, though, which is my point for all of this, which is whether you thought that movie was amazing or awful, you're right. And you're also wrong.
Yeah.
And even the data can't tell you that you're correct or not, right? The data can't tell you whether you're right or wrong.
Yeah.
For example, did you see the movie Argyle, the spy movie?
I did. You did. I did. And that got a terrible rating.
And did you like it?
I did, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. So it got panned by critics and audience reviews, but I liked it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I'm just, but Henry Cavill, that's all you need to say for me. It's like, it's Henry Cavill.
Yeah.
And you're not wrong. That's the thing. Again, we're not wrong and they're not wrong either. So here's the question I've been asking in workshops and to all my clients that are trying to think about how to integrate AI into their process, which is what I'll usually ask is, how many of you are experimenting with AI to create marketing content? And a bunch of hands go up. And then I'll say, great, do you believe that you're getting consistently valuable or results from your content creation? Or are they decent, but kind of, fine, they need a lot of work, or they're consistently awful?
Mm.
And most of the people will, I'll get a few hands on each of those choices, but most of the hands go up on the, it's fine, but it needs a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing I say is, whether you love the content you're getting out of generative AI, or you hate the content you're getting out of generative AI, or that you're sort of meh on it, you're right, and you're also wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing to me is, as we start thinking about what good looks like, right? What does good look like? And that's the challenge, because one of the most insidious parts of the AI-generated content is, it's never going to tell you that it's the best version of itself, right? Mm-hmm. You have to know when it's good enough to stop. And I actually did an experiment here, where you talk to generative AI and you go, write me something, write me a first draft of this, or write me an abstract of that, or write me a summary of this. And it'll do so. And then you go, great, is that the best you can do? And then what it'll do is I can actually write it, do it better. And then it'll write you another version of that.
Yeah.
And then you go, great, is that the best you can do?
Yeah.
And it'll go, well, no, of course I can write a different version of that. And and you can continue that, by the way, ad nauseum, until it starts to repeat itself, or it starts to get off topic, or, it gets into sort of silliness. But that's the key, is you, the human, have to recognize when it's the good, because generative AI is never going to go, hey, listen, the second version I created, that's as good as it's going to get, so shut up, right? So all of that, now, take that same lens, that same mentality, and apply it to the use cases for AI.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I find so often, and I've been doing a little research, you've probably seen it on my posts on social media and whatnot. I've been asking people in my workshops, I've been asking clients, I've been asking across social media, give me your best use cases for generative AI.
Yeah.
And to date, I've collected more than 230 use cases.
Wow.
And I started to categorize them against two options, which was, one, efficiency. In other words, did it create a more efficient process, or was it actually less efficient but valuable in another way? In other words, is it net new work that we have to do, but we have some new new thing, or is it basically more doing something we already do, but it makes it more efficient? And then the second category is that capability. Is it a net new capability, or is it an existing capability? And so that gives us four, if you sort of quadrant those out, that gives us four categories, which is, one, I call it an enhancement, right? Which is a new capability that also makes us more efficient. For example, AI tool, it learns your brand guidelines, your tone, your editorial jargon, automatically points out these flaws as you start to work with content. It's an existing capability, or new capability that we have with AI, that actually also will make us more efficient in checking that thing. Then the second category is refinement, which is an existing capability that makes us more efficient. So that's like Grammarly, or, things that we're already doing, right? Real-time translation. We're already doing translation, but this one can do it faster for us, or at scale. Then there's the third category, which is supplement, which is an existing capability that we have, but adding AI to it will be less efficient. And a great example of that is something that we do, we want to do, but we don't do it because it takes too much effort and time. Competitive research, persona research. It is stuff that we can do and do all the time, but AI actually makes it more valuable for us to do more frequently because it's actually, it can actually do it for us.
Yeah.
And then the fourth and last is the complement, which is a new capability that also makes us less efficient. And this is the true innovation category, right? You know, you build a new chatbot with a custom learning model that scans all your training documentation to gives you some cool new helper application. It's net new work and it's a net new capability.
Yeah.
So if you start to look at those things, and here's the interesting part, the sort of punchline, if you will, out of the 230 use cases that I've collected so far, only 6% are enhancements. In other words, a new capability that also makes us more efficient. And only 18% are complements. In other words, new capabilities that's less efficient. Now, that means that roughly 24, a quarter of the use cases are basically new things that we can do with AI that we either couldn't do before or that we deprioritized. And that makes sense, right? We don't know what we don't know. We're just learning this new technology and all those kinds of things.
Yeah.
As expected, 31% of the use cases are what we call refinements, where it's basically like, it just helps us do the same crap we do every day faster.
Yeah.
Grammarly, you know, translation, you know, writing an abstract, you know, all those kinds of things, right? But here's the biggest category, the biggest category, 45% of all of the use cases are what we would call supplements. In other words, they are existing capabilities, but that would add net new work to our plate. In other words, those doing the competitive research or doing persona research more frequently or doing all kinds of, you know, sort of new things that would take new things that, you know, that we don't do all the time because it either takes too much bandwidth, resources, budget, et cetera. So there are all these new, less efficient things that we already should be doing. In other words, they add headcount to our, they add time. And that's what the, so that's interesting in and of itself. But the real punchline here is that when you do that categorization, something comes out, which is where do you want to prioritize? Because what I find is that senior leadership, CEOs, CFOs, et cetera, they all expect us to come up with refinements. In other words, how can I save headcount for the stuff that we're doing already that AI can take over, right, without any human intervention? And where I find most teams focusing on what they want to do with AI is that supplement area where they where they're going to actually add. So the problem is that if you go into building a use case for your boss, a business case for why you should integrate AI into your workflow, you're probably erring toward the supplement or enhancement categories. In other words, cool new stuff that's actually going to add to our workload, but it's really cool and it's really awesome. But your leadership expects you to come back with refinement. And I've actually seen teams do this where they're building this big business case and the and then the leader senior leadership goes, well, wait a minute. You mean you need new headcount? You need new resources? You need new budget? And they're like, it's going to be awesome. And they're like, no, we wanted the opposite. We wanted to figure out how you were going to cut your heads off, right? So
we've seen the news.
That's right. So building the proper business case is what's really critical here, either to fly in the face of what's expected or to consciously basically make sure that you're complying with the ask that's being made. So, and it can also help you limit those use cases to make sure that you're doing something really productive and prioritized for the business rather than just throwing a bunch of stuff up against the wall.
Yeah, no, I love this. And I also think that's particularly in marketing. I think we've seen it previously with other tools as well, because I think that's where we went with metrics and measurement and stuff like that. Suddenly, because we could, we created more work for ourselves by creating more reports. And I mean, I was doing it a bit this week. I was diving down a rabbit hole of analytics and thinking, all I'm doing now is just because I can, I'm having fun. I should pull out of this and think about what are the metrics that are actually useful for the business that are going to make us more efficient, not, just doing things because we can and it looks cool. And I wonder if we've got a natural tendency to do that in marketing.
Well, that's right. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like there are all kinds of things. Look, you know, I have too much money and too much time, said no marketing person ever, right? And so when you say, look, here's a new technology.
Yeah, yeah.
Our first inclination with a new technology or a new tool is not to go, well, how do I, you know, how do I do something that I do every day? How do I make that more efficient? That's not our first inclination. It just isn't. Yeah. Our first inclination is, how do I do something I've never done before that's really cool that I've seen other people do? And now I can do it because it's going to make it easier or more capable for me to do that. So it's actually adding to my workload, or I have to replace something that I'm doing. And so that's the natural inclination. And that's why I'm in firm belief. That's why, you know, look, it's a small sample size, you know, 230 use cases, but that's why I firmly believe that almost half of the use cases are, let's do the cool new thing that makes us less efficient.
Love it.
And
love
only it. A third are the stuff that's like, let's do the stuff that we do every day that, you know, really replaces my existing tasks. Yeah. So it's, I think it's just really interesting to get those things aligned if you're trying to really get true integration of AI into your process, because know what you're building for, right?
Yeah. I love the way that you've taken this research approach to this as well, because I think that We're in. I mean, I know it's a bit. I don't know. Is it cliche to say this, but it's a bit unknown, isn't it? What AI can do for us, and I think this initial first flush of use cases is exactly. You know, it's important for us to know what are we really trying to get done, and what how does that impact our work, and is it a good choice, and like you say, the business case for using it. It's, I've created more work for us. That's fantastic. So where might people find more work? Where would 45% of marketers find useful stuff that won't create more work, would actually make them more efficient, Robert?
They're going to find it at our wonderful little website, which is contentadvisory.net, where we're putting all of our wonderful sort of pithy insights, as it were.
Splendid. And are you formally collecting more use cases, or is this an informal thing? So if somebody has a use case, do you think they should reach out to you?
I wouldn't say formally, but I am informally collecting more use cases. Yeah. Yes. I'm sort of cataloging them as I pull them in. You know, some of them are really great and some of them are like, really? I mean, really? That's what you want to do?
Yeah, I'm sorry about those, mate. When people spin the dial on the interwebs, where are they going to find you?
They'll find me mostly on LinkedIn these days.
Nice. I'll include all the links in the show notes. And for me, mate, will you be in the pub next week? Thank you, Robert. And that use case research sounds really interesting. And if you have an AI use case to share with Robert or interest in that work, you'll find links to him in the show notes. So that's a wrap on episode 213 of the Rockstar CMO Effing Marketing Podcast. I've been your host, Ian Truscott. Thanks to Kathy and Robert for sharing their insights. You can find links to them, their work, and all the things we discussed in the show notes on rockstarcmo.com, along with our blog, newsletter, and all of our previous episodes. And thank you for dropping a dime into your podcasting jukebox, selecting our track, and jiving along with us. I'd love to hear from you, so please say hello or drop us a rating or review in your favourite podcast app. Or just keep listening. I'm glad you're here. Next week, I'm going to try flying solo, which I think is probably harder than interviewing a guest. And I'm going to try something new. My 5 effing thoughts for the week. So bear with me on that. Let's see how that goes. But I won't be completely alone, as Robert Rose will be back in the virtual bar with a fresh marketing thought. Until then, have a great week. And I hope you'll again join us here next week on Rockstar CMO FM.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.